God made the world and all its wonders for man to explore. And there are countless wonders just outside your front door. Now join natural world photographer and journalist Roger W. Downs as he shares the stories of the people, places, music, and cuisines he has discovered as we explore with RWD.
Hey, welcome back in. Thanks for joining us again for another episode. I'm Roger W. Downs, your host, or RWD. And if this is your first time listening, thanks for joining us. And this podcast is dedicated to exploring different areas and the people they're in and telling their stories and the history, so it might inspire you to go see it for yourself. I just want you to get up out of your house, get out of that cubicle, and go explore. So a while back, I went up to Sunburst Falls, which is just off the Blue Ridge Parkway in Western North Carolina, to capture a few shots because I had heard about it and then I researched it and fell in love with the location. But while I was there, I learned about the town that the falls are named after and the pivotal role that that town played in African American history in Western North Carolina. So I studied it a little bit, and in my studies, I stumbled across an article by staff writer for the Smoky Mountain News, Corey Valancourt, and we're going to chat with him a little bit later on in the podcast so he can tell you the history of Sunburst and why you can't find it on a map anymore. But I'm getting way ahead of myself here. Let me share the story, my adventure, if you will, of going out and photographing Sunburst Falls. So I had found it online on Instagram where some people had taken some shots of them standing below the bridge off of Route 215 and also around the falls in the summertime. And I thought, you know what? I bet you that waterfall would be beautiful in the fall. So in October, I jumped in my truck one morning early to head out to the falls because as a landscape and nature photographer, I like to get to a location early in the morning when the sun's first coming up so you get those really beautiful golden rays, or it's a little hazy and it just makes it picturesque. Plus, typically on a Tuesday, people aren't out at the waterfalls at 7 o'clock in the morning where you'll find wildlife, landscape, and nature photographers. So you don't have to worry about too many people stumbling into your shot. So I decided to take the Blue Ridge Parkway out to the falls, and it was relatively foggy that morning. And when I mean relatively, I mean wildly foggy, beyond what I thought was even safe for me to be up there. But I came around a corner, out through a tunnel, and all of a sudden, I was into pea soup. I crept along the Blue Ridge Parkway all the way from Asheville to Route 215 at about maybe 10 to 15 miles an hour. I was following someone else's taillights, hoping and praying that they didn't drive off the side of the Blue Ridge Parkway. As I passed a sign that said, "Stay off the parkway if it's foggy, icy, or bad weather conditions," I thought, you should have put that at the entrance. But eventually, I safely made it to Route 215, and I headed north towards Sunburst Falls. As I drove up upon the bridge that the falls goes underneath, I looked for a parking area quickly because it's on a curve, and there really isn't one. So if you're headed there, be careful. There is a place where you can pull off, but you still may want to go early in the morning because there isn't a lot of room for vehicles and the road is rather narrow and so is the bridge. But I did find a location pretty safely, and I was excited when I got out of the truck, grabbed my camera bag, and walked back over to the bridge and the falls that there was a platform that came out near the bridge that you could stand on and safely photograph the waterfall behind the guardrail. Now, some people like to stand right on the bridge, and that's okay too, but my concern was it was really foggy that morning, so I was concerned that someone who may be distracted by the fog wouldn't see me standing on the bridge and would hit me. So I put caution into play, and I went out on that little platform behind the guardrail and safely started to set up my tripod and camera to be able to capture the magnificent and beautiful, stunning, amazing Sunburst Falls. And it just started to turn into autumn. The leaves are just starting to turn different shades of gold, and there was green still on the trees, and the fog was rising up out of the waterfall. Now, if you haven't seen that photo, I've got it up right now in a blog associated with this podcast at explorewithrwd.com. So please go check it out. Or you can visit my website for all my art at rogerwdownsphotography.com. But after I captured that shot, and I was so excited about it, I thought, well, you can still crawl down underneath the bridge that I just crossed over, and maybe I can get a shot of the waterfall coming down off the bridge, because when the water cascades down off the waterfalls I just shot, goes underneath the bridge, there's another waterfall directly downstream from the bridge, which is a direct drop of about 40 feet or so. And I thought, man, that'd be such a great shot to capture too. So I wandered over to the hill where I could see a path that went down. And it was covered in leaves, it was wet and slick, and there was rocks below, and I thought, I'm not going to make that journey today. I've already broken my ankle once going out to photograph a location. I wasn't interested in doing it again. So that shot will have to wait until spring or summer. I'll have to go out and get it again. So I walked back over to my truck on the other side of the road and started to pack my gear up and get ready to leave. And that is when another photographer rolled up to capture the falls as well. And as he got out of his vehicle, we started to talk about Sunburst Falls. And that's when he told me that the falls had been named after the logging town of Sunburst. And I said, oh, really? Where's that? He said, oh, you can't find that on a map anymore. It has been washed away in history. I'm like, washed away? Was there a flood? He said, go look it up. You'll see what I mean. And that's how I discovered local historian and, more importantly, staff writer for the Smoky Mountain News, Corey Valancourt. And we're going to chat with him about the history of Sunburst and how it was washed away in history out of Western North Carolina and the pivotal role it played for many African Americans in the early 1900s next.
No wonder off now. Explore with RWD will be right back after this.
It seemed bleak for the colonists to be able to establish their own country during the American Revolutionary War. The British were winning until the British made a fatal mistake and threatened the wrong people. And Western North Carolinian historian Bill Carson from the Orchard at Alta Pass shares that story during episode 2 of Explore with RWD. Listen directly after this podcast.
That wasn't too bad now, was it? Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Welcome back in. I'm Roger W. Downs, your host, and now we're going to explore the history of Sunburst, the town that played such an important role in African-American history in Western North Carolina in the early 1900s, but sadly is no more. And here to talk about it is staff writer for the Smoky Mountain News and contributor to Asheville's NPR station Blue Ridge Public Radio and local historian Corey Valancourt.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. I'm glad to be here. You know, I usually cover politics and government. However, when I have a chance, I like to dive into these historical features. And this is probably one of the most fascinating subjects I've encountered in this region.
Yeah, Sunburst has such an interesting history behind it. But if you wanted to go find it on a map so you could visit a historical location in Western North Carolina, you'd be hard-pressed. Why is that?
Well, that's a long and complicated story. I've written about this a few times and done work for Blue Ridge Public Radio on it, so I'd encourage everyone to go check that out after this and look a little deeper. But if you really wanted to find where what most people think of as Sunburst is, it's actually deep below the waters of Lake Logan in southeastern Haywood County.
Are the houses and all of that still there from what you've been told?
I do know that they disbanded the sawmill that was there at the time, but I don't know about the structures, how much of it they got rid of, or what still remains there. I guess that's a mystery that is still kind of out there waiting to be answered, but this happened decades and decades and decades ago, so I would think anything that's still down there is probably mostly disintegrated.
Yeah, I would think by this point in time, if it was that long ago. But Sunburst, though, the town, before it was waterlogged, if you will, really played a pivotal part in American history, especially for Canton, because they were the town that fed Canton a lot of the wood that they used for the paper mill. But what was really great about Sunburst is it didn't care too much about who you were or where you came from. Can you elaborate a little bit on that for me?
Sure. So as white settlers came to this part of North Carolina, they obviously took note of the lush woodlands around, and small-scale logging began on a lot of these little creeks. And so eventually, one of the early settlers here sold his logging rights to a man by the name of Broyhill. Now, most people will know Broyhill as a longtime furniture manufacturer, and they were just gobbling up as much wood as they could out of Haywood County here for a long, long time. The original Sunburst kind of started centered around the furniture industry, but right up the Pigeon River, sits the town of Canton. And since I want to say the late 1800s, maybe early 1900s, right in the center of that town is a paper mill. It's gone by many names over the years and changed ownership several times, but back at the time it was called Champion. And they also wanted all of this wood that was coming down out of the mountains. And so eventually Sunburst existed almost solely to feed wood to the paper mill in Canton. Now, there were also some other rather large customers, especially around World War I. At that time, certainly naval vessels and even some aircraft, most aircraft, were made out of wood, out of light, strong spruce. There's some hardwoods out here, too, where now U.S. military rifles and weaponry, they rarely have wood on them. But back in the day, rifle stocks, you know, everything that you can imagine, it still required wood. So that really buoyed the success of this company for many years. And as such, they always needed labor.
And they hired a ton of different people. And what was really interesting from what you told me before when we chatted was that they didn't discriminate at all.
That's right, Roger. I talked to a local man here. His name is Lewis Oates. And both of his grandfathers worked at Sunburst for a time. Fred Moore, I believe. And then I can't quite recall the name of his Oates grandfather. But one side of his family came from Blue Ridge, Georgia. The other side came from Bryson City, because at the time, blacks weren't especially welcomed into the workforce in a lot of places. There also never really were a lot of African Americans in Western North Carolina, percentage-wise. So it was pretty rare to see black folks looking for work in this part of the country. But Lewis Oates told me that he'd long heard from his grandfathers that Sunburst was one place where a man could be judged on the quality of his work and on the skills he brought to the table, as opposed to the color of his skin.
That really was a light of hope for a lot of African Americans, because in the early 1900s, if you were African American, you had a hard time making your dreams come true in America. It wasn't until the 1960s that things really started to change.
Yeah, that's right. And there was a good number of African Americans up there. Now, again, remember, this is a logging camp around the turn of the century. And so it is out in the wilderness. The roads don't go there. There's a railroad. There was a log flume for a time. But this is a very, very isolated community in a very rugged place. And so despite the relative equality of the work, the accommodations up there, the dorms and the mess halls and everything, that was still segregated. So there was a separate school for black children. There were separate living accommodations, separate churches. But Oates told me that one of his grandfathers was a musician, and one of the times that the people of Sunburst would come together, black and white, was on Sundays. They would have musical jams. And of course, with the Appalachian musical tradition here, borrowing heavily from African-American instruments like the banjo and then Scotch-Irish ballads, you had kind of a melting pot of music where maybe just for a short period of time, some sunny Sunday afternoon, these people all looked at each other as human beings as opposed to people of different races. You know, the American dream is about ownership. It's about being able to control your own destiny, whether that's the house you live in or the land that you farm. And what Oates told me was both of his grandfathers, their experience at Sunburst after it finally closed was they came out here, came out of Sunburst, and they were they had kind of a leg up on other African Americans and on some poor whites, where they had learned a trade, they had been able to save money. And so when his grandparents returned to the towns here of Western North Carolina, Waynesville and Canton, they bought property. Now, that was certainly not unheard of, but it was extremely rare at a time when sharecropping was still a thing and the exploitation of minorities for labor was still a thing. These people had the opportunity to control their own destiny to a certain extent. Mr. Oates told me that after high school, he had joined the military and he had worked in Europe overseeing some aspect of the Pershing missile program, and he had all these top secret clearances. And he said, if my grandparents hadn't been set up the way they were when they got off work at Sunburst, I wouldn't have had those opportunities. So it the impact of Sunburst, not only on the African Americans of that time, is readily apparent, but the effect of carrying that generational wealth into the future, I think, is Sunburst's greatest, I guess, gift to this region.
So who was it that decided to do that? Because I'm assuming back then, whoever made that decision probably got some kickback from their peers.
I really don't know. And I would just have to think that, all right, here you have a major industrial concern, a logging operation. It's heavily reliant on workers, solely reliant on workers. They're not waiting for trees to grow or to be able to be harvested. They're making sure that they have as many hands on these things as they can. And then, of course, on the railroad that took them down the stream and all of those things. So I would just think that these corporations weren't as concerned with race. They just saw the employment level as a number and said, we have to have this many number of workers. I don't care if they're white, black, red, brown, yellow, or green. We need to keep the mills rolling.
I'm glad to hear that it certainly benefited African-American families in the early 1900s, but it really wasn't about social justice. It was more about the dollar then.
I would guess. I mean, that certainly often trumps, I guess, our altruism of wanting to treat everyone equally and give everyone the same opportunity. You know, we, I think, spend much more time worshiping the dollar than we do thinking about other people. So if you're going to ascribe their motives to some sense of racial justice, I think at that time that would not have been correct. It was probably just more about, let's make as much money as we can.
Well, it still worked out in their favor, and I'm glad to hear that that blessing came along to them. But let's talk a little bit about how Sunburst got started. I know it started off as a logging camp, and then it blossomed out into a town, and then there became the bastardized version of Sunburst. Can you share that story with me?
Sure. So I don't know if they really thought it through very well when they initially established Sunburst. And after a little while, they realized that whether it was elevation or the speed of the various creeks and waterways, there was some inconvenience where the site just wasn't working out for them. So they decided to move the whole thing 4 miles downstream. And of course, the people who had been there living in the original Sunburst, they ended up giving it the nickname of Bastard Sunburst because it was the newer version of it. But that incarnation of Sunburst lasted a lot longer than the previous one. And so again, when most people think of Sunburst, they're not thinking of the original camp, which was 4 miles further out. They're thinking of what is now buried beneath Lake Logan.
So where was the original camp at? Can you go hike through it and possibly see the remaining foundations of the structures or anything like that?
I honestly don't know. I have heard rumors that there are bits and pieces of it still out there, and they're in the vicinity of the Sunburst Campground, which is a little pull-off area down near Lake Logan in the Pisgah National Forest. Now, I want to recommend a very excellent video put out 2 years ago by this organization, award-winning local community history organization, and they're called the Bethel Rural Community Organization. They put out a number of DVDs on interesting topics here in Haywood County, and this is probably their most recent, I want to say. And in that video, there is there's some scenes from an old segregated cemetery that remains and has been largely overtaken by the woods. I've tried to find it a few times, not really putting a lot of effort into it, and of course, I've come up empty-handed, but it is out there. And there are people that know where it is, so it shouldn't be too difficult to find. I think that's a very interesting reminder of some of these folks who lived their lives and passed away at Sunburst. And as nature has returned to reclaim a lot of what was logged, it's also come to reclaim a lot of their final resting places.
So that makes me wonder, though, if Sunburst was so successful in feeding different industries wood out of the forests of Western North Carolina, why did it ultimately shut down?
Yeah, so after World War I, a big part of their customer base dried up, and that was those government contracts. They used to make airplane wings out of spruce, believe it or not. And so that was a major customer that went away. And then there was just a series of bad luck. There was an arson in the early 20s. that did substantial damage. And then there was another fire. I want to say it was lightning induced. So it was just a series of back-to-back blows where Sunburst was really no longer needed, and Champion looked elsewhere for the raw materials they needed to make paper. And so just like it popped up, it just kind of faded away pretty quickly.
Well, I'd imagine that must have been kind of an interesting change for Canton and the paper mill there, because Sunburst is just, let me remember, south of there, right? So I'd imagine it had been just kind of a steady stream of lumber coming in, and then suddenly nothing. So I'd imagine there's probably other timber gathering communities that were throughout the mountains, but I thought they were pretty substantial to their operation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes to show that that massive volume of an operation was no longer needed and probably too expensive to run. And so perhaps they were able to find other ways. I know that the railroads here in Western North Carolina, it took a long time for them to get the kind of penetration they have in other places. Mm-hmm. So I would think that perhaps it was cheaper just to buy and ship logs to your plant as opposed to running an entire town full of people.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. I mean, you're looking for cost effectiveness, and that's how successful businesses operate today. But now it's all about online and shipping, and that it all changes every day, right?
Absolutely.
But when it comes down to the last remaining residents of Sunburst, and I'm sure the town kind of grew up. I mean, if it was cooking right along for a while, I would think there was probably several hundred people who lived there at the mill, I would think.
Oh, I would say without a doubt that was the case. And again, you know, I just had the account of the grandson of some folks that worked there. Of course, anyone who'd worked there is long since passed. It's just, I think it's really interesting that this community, you know, especially the black folks, came and joined other of some of these mother black communities in these small Western North Carolina counties. You know, there was a pretty substantial black population in Silva over in Jackson County, as well as here in Haywood County. We have a historic district that is currently seeking National Register inclusion, and it's called the Pigeon Street area. It's where there are two very old black churches. There used to be a line of black businesses there. Mr. Oates's grandfather's business was there. And so I think you had these, I guess for lack of a better term, these African Americans who had achieved some social and financial mobility moving back into these towns and kind of taking or claiming a small part of them for themselves.
Yeah, like starting their own business. You didn't hear about that years ago. That wasn't even a possibility. Once again, a blessing that came out of Sunburst and working the timber up in the mountains certainly afforded them the opportunity to start their own business and really own a part of their own American dream.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I had talked to another woman here in town who grew up in Waynesville as one of the very few black people. And she said, you know, certainly at the time that Sunburst closed down, these folks left that little insular environment of relative equality. And then they came back and moved into Waynesville where they could only be served out the back door of a restaurant.
Wow. My heart just breaks for them. How sad.
Yeah. And you think, you know, these are folks that worked their whole lives or most of their lives. They owned property. They were responsible citizens in every way. Yet they still did not have access to all of the things some other folks like us may have had simply because of how we were born.
Well, thank God we're still making progress in that general direction to make sure everybody's equal today. And it's sad that it's taken at least 100 years, but we are making progress. Thank God for small favors. But let's talk a little bit about Lake Logan, because I'm interested, what was the decision to flood Sunburst? I would imagine some people probably still live there when they said, hey, by the way, get out because there's water coming.
Yeah, but that was likely all company-owned property, and so they didn't really have an option to stay or to fight. And, you know, if they told you that your job was no longer there and that you would have to leave, I don't think that they would have to unchain you from the front porch. Probably most of these people willingly left. I don't know the real reason why they turned it into a lake, honestly. But if you've ever been down there, it is gorgeous. In the years after Sunburst, it was used as a company retreat for executives and company picnics for the Champion Paper Company. And then in 2000, I believe, the Episcopal Church bought it, and now it serves as a retreat for them. So there are cabins and little halls and places like that strewn about the lake where you can come, you can recreate almost in a dorm-style setting, and then you could take advantage of all the offerings that they have where certainly there were classes and worship services. And then, you know, a casualty of the COVID pandemic this year, one of Western North Carolina's best new music festivals, hands down, the Cold Mountain Music Festival takes place right on Lake Logan, and it's a gorgeous outdoor venue. There are accommodations available. There's kayaking, there's swimming. And so it's just a lovely way to go down into this valley where there's no cell service and be outside, listen to live music, surrounded by glorious nature. So they've certainly made the most of Lake Logan since purchasing it about 20 years ago. And I think that's part of the reason why we're even talking is this entire area could have just faded into obscurity. But instead, some people had the good sense to try to put some money and effort and attention into it. And now it's a great recreational spot. Hiking trails all around. And again, just the beauty of that lake is something to see.
And I did stop by Lake Logan and walked around briefly because I was up taking photographs of Sunburst Falls, which, by the way, is magnificent. And let me just stress again, as I did earlier in this podcast, let me stress that if the slope going down to where you go underneath the bridge is nasty, don't try to make that trek because that looks like a good way to break your neck. But there's so much out there and so much history. It just amazes me what really transpired in that town. And you think about the history that's under Lake Logan now, of the hundreds of people who went out into the forest and cut down the timber and made their future, and not only their future, but their children's future, and in some cases, even their grandchildren's future, because money like that starts a business, which then generates funds that somebody else can take over the business from their parents. And what an amazing part of history for Western North Carolina.
It absolutely is. And again, the Bethel Rural Community Organization, they do amazing work. They've got far more detail than I've got in any of my stuff. And so for folks who are really interested on the definitive word by people who have lived in that particular area for decades and decades, be sure to go check them out and see some of the products that they have on their website.
Well, do you have their website handy? Do you know what it is?
Yeah, it is BethelRural.org.
Perfect. BethelRural.org. That sounds, I'm going to go check it out after I get done talking with you. And Corey, so people can find more articles from you because I know that you are a staff writer who typically covers a political beat, which is interesting because I used to do the same thing. But you also cover a lot of the history in Western North Carolina. Where can they find more articles by you?
Sure. Well, you can go to SmokyMountainNews.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those things. And then some of that stuff bleeds over into Blue Ridge Public Radio, and that's BPR.org. And same thing, Facebook, Twitter. It's pretty easy to go out there and find what I'm working on at any given time. The Smoky Mountain News is a weekly. We print 15,000 copies a week. They're distributed mainly in Haywood, Jackson, Macon, and Swain, as well as the Quala boundary, but also a little bit into Buncombe County. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're a pretty well-rounded publication. We have a great A&E section and a great outdoors section by an award-winning outdoors writer, Holly Kays. And so if you're looking specifically for more stuff on outdoors and trails, certainly check us out because she's got great stuff coming week in and week out.
And we can find that at SmokyMountainNews.com, right?
Absolutely.
Well, perfect. Again, Corey Valancourt, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate your time and chatting with me about the history of Sunburst. It fascinated me when I found out that there was a town underneath Lake Logan and the huge part it played historically in Western North Carolina.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. I was glad to be here. I'm glad and thankful that you're using your platform to showcase some of the stories and the places like this because, you know, for the same reason I went and did the work on this story, if we're not talking about it, it will be forgotten.
Amen to that. And we need to make sure we don't allow that to fade off into history.
Explore with RWD. We'll be right back after this.
And those are the melodies of Native American Matthew Tunai. Not only is a cultural storyteller for the Cherokee Nation in Cherokee, North Carolina, but also an accomplished and award-winning musician and Baptist minister. So how does Matthew weave his culture, his religion, and talents all together? Well, that is a story you have to hear for yourself in Episode 4 of Explore with RWD. Or read about it now at explorewithrwd.com.
Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
You know, during the commercial break, it occurred to me I haven't thanked you yet today for listening to the podcast. So, thank you. I really do appreciate your support. And if you're brand new, please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. And I promise I'll continue to bring you stories about the people and places that I go explore and discover. And if you get a chance, please check us out online at explorewithrwd.com, or you can find us on your favorite social platform at explorewithrwd. And once again, I want to thank Smoky Mountain News staff writer and contributor to Asheville's NPR station, Blue Ridge Public Radio, Mr. Corey Valancourt, for his dedication to the story and sharing his knowledge with us. Thank you, sir. And you can learn more about the history of Western North Carolina through Corey's other articles at smokymountainnews.com. Oh, and before I forget, next week you have to listen, because I'm going to share the story of how one Appalachian man took his experiences of hunting with his dad as a boy in the mountains of Western North Carolina and turned that around into a profitable business, which now helps to save the environment. And finally, if no one else has told you this yet today, I love you. I know I don't even know you, but I love you, and the good Lord above loves you. He's promised you that. Make sure to count your blessings, because even in these really difficult and challenging times, life is good because God is good. And no matter what you've done, you are forgiven. All you need to do is ask, and He'll separate your sin from you as far as the east is from the west. So until next time, peace, love, and coon dogs, y'all.
Thank you for listening. Visit us online at explorewithrwd.com to discover more about Roger, his photography, podcast, and adventures. Or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at explorewithrwd. Remember, we didn't inherit the earth from our parents. We borrow it from our children. May God bless you and yours. Now get outside and go explore. Explore with RWD is produced by Downs Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.